does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Felix Rosenquist leads him to turn number one.
And now Will Power is going to try to go to the outside and make the move. Hennigan to turn number one. And they go side by side to Rosenquist and Power. But Hennigan to the fountain. Will Power has taken the lead from the pole sitter, Felix Rosenquist.
Off of the hairpin now, and we've got some contact. And Joseph Newgarden is slow. And there goes Colton Herta. And there goes Alex Pillow. So some issues for Joseph Newgarden off the hairpin. Jake Query has got Dixon hit back to turn
definitely,
number one.
You know, it was kind of, we were probably thinking there was going to be more cautions and it would have been a little bit safer, but those didn't come. So I didn't really, you know, follow the fuel number that we needed to get early on to detail, and it kind of caught up with us a little bit later, but huge credit to the team.
Do I think it's a clean racing? What's your opinion on it?
I actually haven't had a chance to look at it besides watching it in real time. Do you think that that's something that should be penalized?
Well, it seems pretty black and white to me, but I'd ask the question to everybody else. You know, if it was in the reverse, I would expect to be penalized.
Well, hello. We may have some things to discuss tonight, not just the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. We believe we have finalized results from that one with Scott Dixon adding to the memories of his masterful career with win number 57. And I really was looking forward to celebrating that and had plenty of other things to get into tonight. But move aside, I'm sorry. The news fairy more than delivered today, more than we were expecting or could ever imagine. Hello and welcome. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. In Indianapolis, Elijah Robertson is in our studios with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. Connor Daly is going to join us coming up in just a little bit. We will ask Connor about the news of the day and this, that, and the other. But we will start with a bombshell. For the first time since, I think, 1995, a win has been overturned in IndyCar, not just a points penalty or a monetary penalty, and it's not 2 hours after the race, it's 6 weeks after the race. So, Kurt, a lot of questions we all have at this point, but let's just start with the facts and explanation of why Joseph Newgarden has been DQ'd, along with his team Penske teammate Scott McLaughlin, and Will Power penalized from the race at St. Petersburg.
So it does. Well, welcome. It's good to be with you. And I don't know that I appreciate the news fairy coming to us this direction. You know, you like news. And sometimes, like during the show a couple years ago, Alex Pillow is changing teams and changing organizations he's racing for and all those kind of things. So some of these things are juicier than others or have different levels of interest. But in this case, yeah, Team Penske is penalized in a couple different ways. Disqualifications for Joseph Newgarden's car, the winner of the race. He led 92 of the 100 laps in St. Petersburg. And the third place car of Scott McLaughlin, also disqualified, and a 10-point penalty for Will Power's car. So all three of Team Penske's cars in violation of the push-to-pass parameters. I think most of our listeners, although there are people driving around Indianapolis right now asking, what's a push-to-pass? It is the overtake system that drivers can push a button to give their engine extra horsepower and use it for passing purposes. You do that anytime during the race. You got a limited number of pushes, number of seconds, if you will, and it is never allowed then at the start and restarts. Those were not times when the push to pass is active. So Team Penske violated a couple rules and basically using the push to pass system when it was not allowed. That's the essence of it, without kind of getting into the gory details. And so this takes away a race win for Team Penske. It jumbles the standings or shakes it up in a way that is interesting, moves him down from the lead in the point standings after two races down to 11th. So this is big. And as you mentioned, 1995 and 2000 and 1983 are the two times I can remember. That was Al Unser Jr. at Portland in 95 and Tom Sneva at Milwaukee in 83. And those wins were taken away. And in both those cases, though, they appealed and they were reinstated. But it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case this time.
We will jump through Twitter and X questions. Maria asked this one, and I'm glad you mentioned that too, because we do have some people driving around Indianapolis that don't pay as close attention, but this kind of catches your eye. You know, I saw the Pat McAfee show today was talking about, now Pat's an Indianapolis guy, so he's more attuned to this, but it can be confusing. And Maria says, can you please, in a basic step-by-step format, explain the debacle at St. Pete, pushed pass rule, alternate start finish, etc. And the alternate start finish comes into play because it is push to pass, which is essentially an extra 50 horsepower that is available. And one of the reasons they have this is, hey, let's face it, some places it's a little bit difficult to pass on road and street courses. So this spices things up a bit. And it's not like Formula One with the DRS zone, which severely hurts the leader. This one, it's equal. You know, the leader does not get the push to pass as it is, meaning flattening out the rear wing to add a little
in Formula One
drag. In Formula One. In IndyCar, push to pass is available to the leader so they can defend if they want, but it's not available on the start of the race and a restart until you get to that alternate start finish line, which if you watch qualifying, it's right before pit entrance. And I don't know why every other racing series hasn't figured that out. We give a lot of credit to other series, but IndyCar is far smarter on this. Just as an aside, it means you don't waste a lap. We see that in Formula One all the time, and in NASCAR often too, that they finish their lap and they're just putting around for another lap. So you get your lap timed, and then you dive into the pit lane. For the race, it's still the real start-finish line, but that alternate line just becomes the measure. So it's really 4/5 of a lap on a restart. You cannot use push to pass. You can hit it again once you pass that line, which sets you up for the main straightaway. So that's the idea behind that there. So essentially what has happened here, and the way this came to light, and I know we'll go through questions. First question everyone's asking when they see the headline is, how did this take you 6 weeks after two races in? And it turns out it was discovered matter-of-factly during the warm-up at Long Beach on Sunday morning. And it was discovered because there was some sort of other issue. So IndyCar has the ability to disengage or deactivate push-to-pass for the entire field through some mechanism that everyone is hooked up to. I don't know if that is going through Honda and Chevy or how that works, but they have the ability to do this. And there was something that wasn't working correctly in the warm-up. And by the way, in the warm-up, this is when teams can test their push-to-pass or their overtake button to make sure it's working. There's not a specified amount you can use. The engine manufacturers will determine that. So if you really want to win the warm-up, you could. You could throw out a big number in there. That's one of the reasons I've always said, I don't even look at the warm-up timing. I just ask the driver, how's the car? Because many, many times you will see a great car 21st, the pole winner 21st. That's because they used their push to pass for 4 seconds to make sure it works. And maybe somebody else used it for 20 and got a big lap. And the engine manufacturers don't want you to use it a lot either because it puts stress on the engine. That's part of the deal. So they discovered there was a problem. So IndyCar deactivated it Sunday morning. And then they discovered, wait a minute, there are three cars that still have it. How did this happen? That was Team Penske's three cars. So first things first, they went to make sure, okay, we got a problem here. Let's make sure we get this sorted so we have control over this in the race. And they felt like they did. So there's no question, as far as I understand, about Long Beach, that they knew this was an issue and they first sorted that race so that they had control on starts and restarts. Then here's where one of the questions comes in. Why did they go back to look at St. Pete? Was it just simply, curious about this? Or did another team say, hey, we wonder what's been going on here. Can you look back at St. Pete's? And then maybe the next thing we'll get to is the team Penske release. Do you have that in front of you, Kurt? I'll let Kurt do the reading tonight, and I'll do the opinion part of this and just sharing what I think other people are thinking.
So let me read. This is the team Penske release. It comes not from Roger Penske. It comes from team president Tim Cindric. Quote, unfortunately, the push to pass software was not removed as it should have been following recently completed hybrid testing in the team Penske IndyCars. This software allowed for push to pass to be deployed during restarts at the St. Petersburg Grand Prix race when it should not have been permitted. The number two car, driven by Joseph Newgarden, and the number three car, driven by Scott McLaughlin, both deployed push-to-pass on a restart, which violated IndyCar rules. Team Penske accepts the penalties applied by IndyCar, end quote. Keep in mind, and we haven't said this, many people know this, but not only did Joseph Newgarden dominate Team St. Petersburg by leading 92 of the 100 laps, but his teammates finished third and fourth in that race as well. So very much a Team Penske stronghold on that particular race, as it's been in a lot of years. So that's not really a surprise, but that's the facts. All right.
So when I first saw this, my first read through this was, okay, Team Penske is just saying this was something overlooked. This was an inadvertent mistake. And that is going to be their excuse. And you know, then maybe you could say, well, that's unfortunate, but, you know, these are the rules and they're going to be penalized. But then you read it again. And, you know, Tim Cindric and Team Penske are very smart and they're, I think, being purposely vague here. So there are going to be some questions and we'll find out if how this is answered. But it does not say, when you parse this again, the word mistaken or inadvertently was not used. It just states facts, which are accurate. Yeah, unfortunately, the push-to-pass software was not removed as it should have been following recently completed hybrid testing in the Team Penske IndyCars. So if you add in that word, then there's a little more cover there. And I think, now, from IndyCar's perspective, the penalty probably shouldn't matter. Intent, they just are going to know you can't have this, so we're going to penalize you. But in the big spirit of things and how this is going to be perceived, I think that's pretty critical. And we cannot hide from the fact that this team and their owner also owns the race series. And this is going to be a real issue if they were purposely cheating. And this is not ride height, which you can always argue that we went over a curb and it impacted things. And the car was going to pass tech before the race and it didn't pass tech after the race. Or it's not a gray area and everyone's trying to push this. This is as simple as it can be. And if someone was trying to allow an extra 50 horsepower for as much as you want on these critical laps, when it is the easiest time to make up spots. And both of those drivers did make up spots at the start and the restart. McLaughlin at the start, Newgarden had lost the lead with a little small pit stop issue and got it back on the restart. This is a big deal. So that's going to be number one. I'm curious to see if there is any other comment or if it's we stand by our statement. So that's critical. We'll continue to see what, if anyone's gotten a comment. We'll get to a Roger Penske statement in just a moment from the Associated Press. So that's part one. Then part two, you know, it's essentially who ordered the code red. And then it matters. Now, I think it's fair to say Roger Penske is not in the day-to-day business. Yes, he knows what's going on with Team Penske, but I'll say this, my opinion doesn't really matter, but my opinion is Roger Penske is not involved in this kind of thing. And you kind of get that sense with when we get to his quote in a moment. Next, though, is Tim Cindric involved? If Tim Cindric ordered the code red, we're going to have a little bit of problem there. The hope is, if you want this to go away as quickly as possible, the hope is that this is a rogue employee, that someone is under pressure to perform. You know, first thing you think of is what happened with Meyer Shank Racing, Michael Shank's team at IMSA last year, manipulating tire pressures. The lead engineer was fired over that. He was the fall guy on this, and we still don't know all the details. Essentially, it was Honda who was the whistleblower in this. And here's another question we'll get to. What did Chevy and Ilmor know? Seems pretty plausible, and I may be way wrong on this, but the chatter I've had with a lot of people is, boy, I would think they would have been aware of something like this. Now, they're in a very difficult spot. I don't know how that is handled. They're sort of, I guess Penske is sort of the clients. The teams are the clients of the manufacturers. And Roger Penske owns a stake of Ilmor. So there's another dynamic involved in that. What's showing up on telemetry? One question was, how is this being done? And none of the other teams know it. They have access to this. From my understanding is that, you know, you get 150 seconds a race. Well, it's not live time. And I think the reason, from my understanding, and at one point it was, and then it was, well, let's try to keep the other teams from seeing it because all we're getting is push to defend. You hear on the radio, he's on the button behind you, hit your button. I believe my understanding now is you don't see, now you may be able to tell if they're on the button because you have an onboard camera or something, but I don't believe the seconds left update until the end of the lap. So that could be one reason why other teams didn't know it, but I'm also hearing other teams are saying, how did we miss this? You know, if we need to be a little more diligent on those things. I think people are looking for onboards. Did the lights light up on the dash like they normally do? Now, people can make their dash do other things. Every dash and steering wheel is different. But what you're going to want to find is you're going to want to see a mid-race push to pass on Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin's car and see what the steering wheel is doing, and then see what it is doing on this the start of the race and this restart. I know we have found onboards where you can tell push to pass is being used during the race and found on a restart and his hand movement is the same. But what I don't know is whether the Christmas tree lights up or not. I think that would be another negative that this might have been deliberate if you were doing something so it doesn't show up. And then that's the next question. Is this data show? Does it show up on the stand? Is there any way, and maybe there's not, is there any way Tim Cindric doesn't see this and the lead engineer on the stand? If it does, then that's going to be a different issue. As to why Will Power was not penalized. So it was available on all three Team Penske cars, and Will Power did not use it at the start of the race or on the restart. So that's why he is not penalized as severely. Now, the car was, essentially out of tech. It was illegal, so there needed to be some penalty there, I guess, would be the ruling. But that's why he was penalized 10 points. But the others are DQ'd. They do not score points. Scott McLaughlin's championship hopes are pretty close to all but over, right? He's got basically Bupkis two races in. He's got a 0 and a 5, I think, two races into the season. So he's averaged 2.5 points. It is going to take a massive streak for McLaughlin to get back in, and it's going to be tough for Newgarden as well. So to the other side of things, I think that scenario plays well into the possibility that maybe it was a mistake. If they were blatantly cheating, why didn't Will Power hit the button? So I think that's a fair question if you want to defend Team Penske in this matter. Next question will be, well, wait a minute. Why are McLaughlin and Newgarden hitting the button when it's not supposed to be active? So I've asked a couple of drivers. I'll ask Connor Daly in an hour as well. Because my first thought was, hey, is it just instinct that you do it? And I think it's very plausible to say on the backstretch, you know, let's think about this. There is a lot going on for a driver. And you've restarted the race. You've survived turn one. Then you've somehow gotten by and through turns two and three, where you're always in danger of crashing if someone goes side by side. And it's the middle of the race. Where are we at? I'm going to hit the button. I'm going down a long straightaway. I'm hitting the button. So I think that's possible, that they're just hitting the button. Another told me, I always hit the button because you just never know. I'm just hoping it works. And maybe they made a mistake. And then maybe it's available for everyone else. And then if you ask, well, wait a minute, why didn't McLaughlin and Newgarden, shouldn't they feel this? Drivers forget things. A lot of drivers forget things. I think it is possible that it happened for them and they're not thinking twice about it and wondering, was this just a mistake that the software broke down for everyone and everyone had it? And that's why you push it, because if somehow it worked for somebody and it didn't work for you, if it was a league mistake, they're not going to give you that spot back if you lost it. So let's just hit it just in case. And I would think, I guarantee you now everybody's hitting it from now on because somehow we lost control of this. So those are some of my starting questions out of this statement from Roger Penske to Jennifer Eyer of the Associated Press was very disappointing in a text message. I am embarrassed. Statement from Chip Ganassi, or a quote to Jennifer Eyer. I've emulated Roger Penske for many years on and off the track, so today's news is quite a disappointment for me. This is a blemish on his team, their organization, and the series. Very disappointing as a fellow owner and a competitor in the series. End quote. So that statement to me doesn't sound like Chip Ganassi is buying that we forgot to take it off. Sounds like, and this is what we're going to find, and we may see that someone is relieved of their duties. And that's the other question. Could this be done by someone else without other people knowing it? Same kind of questions were asked of Michael Shank. Is there any way he didn't know about this? And ultimately, it cost Michael Shank his IMSA team. It cost him his manufacturer partnership with Honda and with Acura in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Just furthering up on the Penske situation, and Jenna had this in her story. It's the second cheating offense this season. Joey Logano was fined $10,000 and docked his second-place starting position for using a type of a glove with webbing that he put his hand out the window in qualifying, and it was determined it's like you're adding an extra wing. It was an aerodynamic blocker during qualifying, and Penske's quote to the Associated Press at the time was, I didn't like that at all. It's not good, period. I told him, he's the leader of the team. Look, we're under so much scrutiny, and the last thing we need to do is have any noise like that. It's not good for us. It's not good for him. We'll take our punches. End quote. I think that quote would probably kind of apply to this situation and then some. He does not own NASCAR, but I think he's alluding to the fact that I own another racing series, so we always need to be above the rules. Quote from Chevrolet, because I think that was another one that hated. Who's in charge of this? Is Chevrolet complicit? Well, here's Chevrolet's first quote from Jim Campbell. Chevrolet is disappointed that Team Penske violated the rule resulting in the disqualification. We support IndyCar's decision and action. Not a whole lot there. TracksideOnline.com passed this along to me, and may be out there now, from a Chevrolet spokesperson. The code that modifies the IndyCar push-to-pass MyLapse transponder signal resides on the Cosworth Central Logger Unit, CLU, and is the responsibility of the team. Chevrolet has no input or responsibility for the software or operation of the CLU. The engine responds to the output of the CLU, end quote. That answers that, because that was one of the questions that a lot of us had. Hey, do you have to go through your Chevy engine tech to do this? From this statement, it's no, the team can do this as well. I'm trying to look at my notes. Any other, and you know, the next thing is going to be, how do McLaughlin and Newgarden answer this?
And they're going to get a lot of questions. They're going to get a lot of questions.
So they have a couple choices. Could be the team has released a statement. I've been told to not offer any more comment. And they can do that. But I think people are going to perceive that as you are guilty. And then this is a very difficult spot. My hope, liking these two drivers and the people involved very much, my hope is that this was a mistake, that someone forgot to do something, which, by the way, can happen. I have made hundreds of mistakes at my job. It happens. We've heard it. People forget to do something, and sometimes things happen. So I am not willing to rule that out as a mistake in complicated machinery and software that, you know, and I know people are saying, you know, it's in the details. Team Penske's not going to make that mistake. And you can say that, but even the best make mistakes, and I am not smart enough to know what all is entailed in this. And my hope for McLaughlin and Newgarden is that they did not know about this, which is the case in many other penalties where the drivers are penalized, that the crew chief, the engineer, somebody has done something and they know nothing. And then the answer, and I hope they are allowed to say, is, I didn't know. It's a reflex. I do it. And I didn't know about it, and I feel awful about this. Then the follow-up is going to be, can't you tell when you're on push to pass?
What did the drivers say when you asked, you said you spoke with a couple today. What did they say about feeling it? Because
I forgot to ask that today.
My suspicion is...
I think they can feel it.
I think you can feel it, but if you come out of... Yeah.
But you know how much of it, though... And I think what they might say is, you know, it might be like when two people are given a pill and they do those tests, and the people that took the, what is it called, a panacea, you know, that took something that does nothing, back and say, oh, I feel much better now. You know, some of it's just the mental aspect of it that, because I believe I've asked this before at ovals, and it's mixed. I think some have said, you know, I don't really notice the difference. You notice the difference in that I might be catching someone, but if you're just by yourself,
I don't think if you're running, you know, back to back laps, I just, you know, it depends on how you got off the corner. Do you have wheel spin? Do you have a little extra momentum because you went wide in turn 11 at Long Beach, which is a whole nother discussion that we'll get to at some point. Yeah. You know, so I just don't know if you're by yourself, if you know that. I'm a little bit like, I just don't know how the drivers, I don't know why they're on the button. I mean, I get a restart. Maybe you're at, you know, but at the start of the race, you know, you're coming down the line. Why do you push the button?
For certain that this was used at the start of the race.
At the start of the race, right. I get you.
And I think if you're doing that, you're doing it just in case they made a mistake. Did they allow push? Somebody maybe can fact check this. Did they allow push to pass at the start and the restart at thermal as the exhibition?
I don't know. I kind of think they did.
So when we go to the next break, see if you can do a quick Google search of that. Because some people have asked, well, wait a minute, why didn't they catch this at thermal? And that was my thought, is I think, because I know it was allowed in qualifying.
It was much more liberal at thermal.
I think I recall, I may even have this in my thermal notes from that race that I'll go back to. But that is a possibility. So I have pushed a pass. There were 40 seconds for each race segments that were available for the first time in qualifying. Push to pass is available. I also know these are my notes going into the weekend, and I think things kind of changed a little bit as the weekend went. So there could have been a change throughout the weekend. So maybe I'm wrong in this. So I'll let you keep looking in that, or maybe you can text someone with IndyCar that would recall if that was used at Thermal. But anyway, oh, and by the way, Will Power, his 10-point penalty is not really a 10-point penalty because he gained positions because of the other two teammates being DQ'd. So he effectively loses 2 points out of that because he picked up 8 by moving up spots. And oh, by the way, the losing streak is over for Aaron McLaren. That was going to be one of the points, is that I'm hearing Zach Brown's not super happy about how much money they spend and they can't get a win and they can't get on the podium as much as they would like. Well, there you go. There's your win. Losing streak is over for Pato O'Ward. Not quite the way he wanted that. Did you find an answer on that?
So, I think so. So, it says in a difference from points races, push to pass will be active at the green flag. So I think that what happened at Thermal.
Well, maybe that's,
I can't tell you which story that was quoted from, because it, when you ask that question, it doesn't immediately show you which story that came from. But I think that's the way I remember it.
That's kind of my recollection too, is that we were just trying things and it was available there, and you know, we weren't sure how easy it was going to be to pass, so let's let everybody have it on the restarts too. So that could be part of it, is we just did it the last race and just I also remember this just last week. Doug Bowles did sit downs with drivers at Content Day, and this was posted last week, a snippet of people have noticed Scott McLaughlin looking like he's randomly pushing things. And he was asked about that, and I think Scott's answer was, you know, it's kind of a nervous tick that I just move my thumbs around for no reason at all, and I'm not really doing anything. Is that it, or is he covering for what he's doing here? I also saw Jenna Fryer posted just something essentially saying, hey, some people in the paddock are looking at these two onboards from 2022. On restarts with McLaughlin and Newgarden and wondering. So I asked the driver to look at that, and that opinion was these were not in the position where you would be using push to pass. I've only got one source on that, but one driver told me, I don't think that was push to pass for what was posted there. And the button that we think that it could have been pushed there is simply display. There are all kinds of buttons there, and everybody's wheel is set up different, and they're randomly pushing things at all times, and oftentimes it's a toggle screen, it's a display, who knows what else. So that was one thought on that for those that saw that on social media. So unfortunately, if you'd like this to go away, I don't think it's going to be able to go away very quickly. Some questions are going to be asked over the weekend, and from the perspective of those involved, I hope they have really good answers.
Well, it'll be interesting.
I hope there is just a mistake.
You'll be looking and paying close attention to the answers from Joseph Newgarden and Scott McLaughlin for sure, and Will Power. But what I'm really interested to hear is what other people say. You know, right now, if I'm another driver, another competitor, another team, I'm laying low to most degrees. But you know, you said it earlier, I think. You're waiting to hear what Zach Brown says. You're waiting to hear what Chip Ganassi says when he's got a little more of a forum, if you will. So there will be some interesting comments to come.
Yeah, because I think Zach will...
not mince words?
Be more likely to just say what's on his mind. And I think the question they will be asking is, do we know if this was going on last year? At other times, you know, let's do a little deeper dive, and he might be saying, maybe this is why my team didn't win last year. What's going on here? I'm going to need a little bit more on this. You know, the Chevy question was one, because I would want to know, if I'm a Chevy team, hey, are you helping them instead of us? So it sounds like that's our first answer. And, you know, someone that understands the tech part better would corroborate that and would probably say that's incorrect, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
That the teams are going to have some impact on that as well. So there you go. We'll get to some of your Twitter comments and questions on this. We'll actually speak about racing. There is a race this weekend at Barber Motorsports Park, and we've still got a TBD with the entry list already out. And one other that was uncertain is confirmed. So really, we have two TBDs and TBAs going week to week. One is set, one is not. We'll get into that and more coming up. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, let's get to Twitter and the Xbox now. A lot of comments about the News Ferry delivering today for us. We didn't need this. We had plenty of other stuff I wanted to get to. And we've got a race this weekend, by the way. We should also mention that, Kurt, as to when things are happening. It's Barber Motorsports Park coming up this weekend. Race time. This is an NBC race coming up on Sunday. We're on the air, looks like, at 1 o'clock Eastern time, noon local. Green flag is at about 1:40 Eastern time, 12:40. Always an entertaining race at Barber Motorsports Park. We probably won't be previewing it tonight in this show, but we will on Friday afternoon on Peacock and throughout Saturday. Indy Next is back this weekend. A couple of quick notes. It's still a TBA for the number 51 coin car. I honestly do not know who is going to be in it, unless they can talk Nolan Siegel into doing double duty and running Indy Next, which he is leading the championship after one race. Jack Harvey's in the 18 car. You know, Colin Brown drove for them at St. Pete. That's one. You know what? I should have asked Connor Daly. We already talked to Connor Daly earlier on today, so we'll throw that out there now. But I should ask Connor if he has inquired into that. So my apologies. Oliver Askew, Spencer Pigot, whoever else. I don't know on that. We do know that Teo Pourchaire is going to be in the number 6 car again. He was quite impressive as a first-time driver in anything in IndyCar this past weekend. Biggest mover of the race. It's not looking great for David Malukas. So that was one of the Twitter questions. We'll get to that as we move forward. What other questions do we have? This is from Doug Thompson. I kind of hate that my thoughts went there, but any chance we could take a peek at the data from last year's Indy 500? There were a lot of restarts at the end of the race. We've been checking this stuff along the way, right? So it's probably good to mention that there is not supposed to be, there is not push to pass for ovals, with the exception, didn't they have it as kind of an experiment?
They did.
At Gateway.
I believe.
WeatherTech Raceway. I think it was a one-off, and I believe we found it didn't really do anything. So I'm not sure if that's coming back this year or not. But it has not been legally allowed at the Indy 500. But, you know, what you say, I'm sure every team is asking for, hey, nobody caught this before. We need to look at every race in the past. I don't know, though, what can be done. And, you know, that's how this all got out. I'd love to know the inside of this, is where this got to, who knew about it, because there are not many secrets in IndyCar. Maybe I'm missing this, but I knew nothing of this. When this hit Twitter today, when the release came out, first I knew of it, and I know this, the first of anyone in my group. and some of these people are pretty plugged in. I've traded texts with Hinch all day, have talked to some other drivers as well. I didn't ask the other drivers this. I guess I didn't ask Hinch point blank, but I get the opinion. My impression is he knew nothing of this at the time. Did other teams know about it and demand that this be taken care of, or good on IndyCar for doing this? And it might just be simply this. No, this is big, and we need to get out ahead of it, because somebody would eventually find out about it. And I kind of think that's what might have been, because if another team knew about it and wasn't happy, what would they have done, Kurt?
Well, it would have gotten ugly.
They'd have told a journalist. They would have told the
absolutely.
Indianapolis Star.
Yeah.
They would have told somebody else what was going on. And I've not heard any other journalists say, yep, I heard whispers about this, and now we know about it. So really interesting stuff there.
And of all the things that's bad about it, here we are coming off a really entertaining, especially 25 laps at Long Beach. Just a great street race in the final 20 to 25 laps, with Newgarden chasing down Scott Dixon, and then Colton Herta chasing down Scott Dixon and Dixon doing what Scott Dixon does. And maybe that sums up the race weekend in a nutshell that way. And you're going to Barber this weekend. We should be reviewing and previewing on track activity, one of the busiest stretches of the season. And we've spent all of the first hour of this show talking about something that doesn't review or preview.
You know, the headline I would also take just to spend a moment on Long Beach is we wondered about, is Chevy going to be dominant? Well, this is another street race and Honda was dominant. So every week is different. Now, my understanding is Honda already knew that Chevy had found some things and had done what you were allowed to do. You can do some things with the externals of the engine, I think is the wording. And they were trying some things. And maybe Kyle Kirkwood had told me, no, I think we tried some things at St. Pete that maybe those were the only externals. And they went back to the other way for Long Beach. And then you add in this part of it with, it wasn't necessarily that Chevy dominated St. Pete, it was Penske dominated St. Pete. And now we see a bit more why they dominated at St. Pete. Donald Parrish, Moose, asks, I wonder what would have happened to Penske if they were racing for Honda. Well, we saw what happened to a team that was in the Honda family.
Well, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that.
In that culture, cheating is not allowed. So it better have just been simply a mistake. So, yes, that's a good question. Patty Jude, do you think that heads are going to roll at Team Penske? Possibly. You know, if this was not an upper management decision, if this was, again, using the word rogue employee, if this was someone that's saying, you know, I'm responsible for this and we need to be better, then yeah, that person is probably not working at Team Penske right now. So, you know, we'll need to kind of look at a roster sheet coming up this weekend and see on that front. What else? We may need a throat lozenge before the show. No, it's still unfortunately the same amount of time available. We'd like to have more, but we have no more extra time in this. All right, different topic. Elijah Poe, do you think Malukas has possibly lost his McLaren drive off of his accident? Sounds wrong to say, but fill-ins have more than stepped up. So I'm going to try to find the quotes from over the weekend. So my opinion is he is still going to get a chance to drive the number 6 Arrow McLaren Chevrolet at some point this season. But I'm going to try to find the quote that Jenna Fryer got from Gavin Ward and from Zach Brown. Okay, here it is. Injury is obviously more serious than anyone believes. Ward deferred, but Zach Brown added he's still in a cast. He's still got pins. Ward says McLaren is working hard on helping Malukas recover, but acknowledge there may come a point the team needs to think big picture and it might not include Malukas. So there you go.
I think that's the only conclusion you can come to if you're the race team. I think you have to think like that.
The seat's open is the way I'm thinking of it.
Yeah.
And partly the seat is open. Here's kind of my understanding. And I talked to David for a little while and he told me the pins were coming out this week and he's doing things and everything he can to kind of keep out the strength. But you know, when I talked to him on Saturday, he would not rule himself out for Barber. And the team obviously did not until this morning, but logic said that wasn't going to happen. One theory out there is that there's something going on. And then there was a quote, Nathan Brown got a story. He talked to his mom and dad. And the story here was, because I'd heard the same thing, that this is nerve damage. And I've heard of athletes with nerve damage before and regeneration. And sometimes it's just overnight, you wake up and they're fine. So that would make some sense. So Nathan had obviously heard that as well. And he got a quote, I'm trying to find it, but essentially I think his mom shot that down and said, that is not, here it is. Rumblings of nerve damage stifling his recovery process are incorrect, his parents said, though he will forever have some screws in his wrist. And asked if his son could be back in time for the 500, Henry's answer was both hopeful and bluntly realistic. We hope so, but we'll see. So this is unlike a broken bone or ligaments, where you have a timetable. The Indy 500 is not super strenuous physically. It is, by the way, we're pretty much right at a month from carb day. If they don't know he's going to be available in 2 weeks, the team is going to have to make some plans. I hear the Indy 500 may be set, but I don't know it 100%. I heard that over the weekend, and then I started, well, if it's set, I know it's not set for David Malukas.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's set for Tony Kanaan, although we are going to see him in a car to be prepared for if Kyle Larson can't start the race. So I guess it's Callum Ilott.
I would go with Callum Ilott.
Because I asked James Hinchcliffe, I said, is there any chance this is you? Because I was going down, who else could be their choice? And if it's not Callum Ilott, it's got to be someone like that. And Hinch said, no, it's not me. So I think it's Callum Ilott. So, all right, we'll preview hour two coming up in a moment on Trackside.
Hi, this is Scott McLaughlin, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Okay, there's still a lot more to uncover. We need to go back to some things with Long Beach. I know we have a lot of other nuggets we want to get into. And Connor Daly is set to join us. Coming up next, Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Scott Dixon, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
Thank you for staying with us as Trackside continues, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. Joining us now is Indy 500 driver, set for his 11th attempt at the greatest spectacle in racing in the number 24, Polka Dot Chevy for Dreyer and Reinbold, Cusick Motorsports. It's Connor Daly. How are you, Connor?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you doing? We also, your son and I have burgers now that you can order in Indianapolis. So we're feeding the state of Indiana.
Cluster truck, and we'll get to that. And that's one of the reasons we scheduled this conversation in advance, is associated with the Burger Bash, with 20% of the Connor Daly and Jackson Lee burgers going to help cancer research for the IU Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. But I think there might have been other news today. Luckily, this show was pushed back because of the Pacers from Tuesday to Wednesday. I hope you haven't already taped Speed Street, your podcast.
Well, we record on Tuesday, so sadly we missed the news, but I will be putting up a YouTube video myself that I'll put up on my channel to kind of talk about it and get our audience just something to look over. But yeah, crazy news. Honestly, I don't remember in my time in IndyCar, I don't really remember a DQ of this nature. I feel like I've seen penalties happen and things that you're like, oh, wow, that's crazy. But of this nature, and I guess taking this long to find out, that I'm okay with. I don't mind that they found out when they did find out and they made the penalty, because rules are rules. It's not, you know, I don't care if they, I mean, well, if it was a year from now, that's a different story. But like, we're in season, you know what I mean? We've had only one official race since St. Pete. So in a championship perspective, it's not that long ago. But it got the world talking. IndyCar's trending on the internet. So that's a win for us, I think, overall. We need it right now.
And it took a while in some ways because they figured it out at the next similar event. So that was when they noticed the discrepancy with, wait a minute, push to pass isn't working for anyone. Why is it working for those three cars in the Sunday morning warm-up at Long Beach? We've had winners penalized before, points and things, but and as we tape this in the afternoon, somebody's probably found this, but the early thing I heard late this morning was, we have to go back to like 95 to see a win taken away from someone in the IndyCar world. So this is unprecedented territory. Team claiming it was an oversight and forgot. So I'll ask you from this standpoint, the drivers had to push the button, but potentially in their defense. So they obviously, you know, and we've already found the video with Joseph Newgarden clearly pushing the button on the restart. But I'll ask this, and this is what I asked Hinch today. Do drivers sometimes instinctively, you know, just push it and either hope that somebody forgot to disable it, or just, and especially in the backstretch, by then maybe you've forgotten that you're still on the outlet on the first lap of a restart?
Yeah, well, first to talk about your, like, taking a win away from someone, I think I remember when Justin Wilson won at Texas, there was something that they found with the car, but it was only like a financial penalty. And yep, some people talked about that for a while. Now, again, they didn't take the win away from him, obviously. But I think that was the only time I remember they found something with the car, but like, it's just going to be a financial penalty, and someone had some things to say about it. But anyway, that's the last thing I remembered off the top of my head. And I might be wrong on that, but, so the button, I would push that button as much as humanly possible. Like if, yeah. if the thing is, I was in a group chat with Hinch as well, like you mentioned this morning, and Alex, and I think some drivers will just push the button. I think to do it, maybe it's a mental thing. Maybe it's like, hey, maybe if we can trip the system, maybe it works. You know what I mean? But I also do believe that we're so in tune with the rules. Like when you're told, yeah, you can't use overtake on starts and restarts, well, you're not going to try because, I mean, well, I haven't tried at least, but the fact that I guess Joseph, if that when they have the video of him using it, well, then I, in my mind, think, well, maybe Joseph's like everyone else is using it too. Because if he can use it, I would assume everyone else can use it too, in my own mind. If that is if I don't know what's going on. Now, again, I will not claim to know anything of what's going on in that group. Not sure. They're all very smart people. But if I pressed it and it works, well, I assume everyone else is going to have it too. Because it seems like a wild thing to have access to and then no one else have access to it. So that's the one thing I'm like, I would assume that maybe for a while, Joseph was probably like, yeah, I assume everyone's using it. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's a big... Like when you talk about an advantage, that's a big advantage. So the fact that they took the win away, I think is a fair penalty, because a 50 horsepower boost advantage on starts and restarts, which are two very important activities in the race, I mean, that's a big advantage. So if no one else had it, I'm sorry, but that the penalty is fair, I would say.
And obviously this is unprecedented territory and very delicate territory, because the offending team owns the series.
Yeah.
Because I think if this was another team, it's possible the argument could be made, and then you'd really have to dig in and try to... Do you believe them or not? Do you believe that this was a mistake, that this was on for hybrid testing and we forgot? Kind of sounds like they're not necessarily buying that. Or if they don't hit them, then it's just simply the outrage from the other teams and from the fans that this is favoritism. I think you could make a case that you simply take away 5 positions, 10 positions, something like that. So to me, this makes me think that, yeah, we're not totally buying this mistake.
Yeah, and again, I don't ever want to, like, everyone on the internet can speculate, and boy, have I seen a ton of it this morning. I mean, there's a lot of people who know the cars better than we do, apparently, and know the rules. But that's you know, I'm not going to pretend to know what they knew or what they didn't know. I mean, the fact is that it happened, and it's going to be wildly talked about, which I think is great. Because that means people are caring about our sport. And after seeing like the ratings in Long Beach, I think everyone was like a little bit taken aback by that and sad by that. But guess what? We have a race this weekend again. So, okay, we all saw the ratings news. If people didn't realize that there was a race, and they're like, oh, wow, crazy. Well, there's one right now. Like there's one happening in a few days. I think there's a great story to follow in Penske trying to rebound from that. In no way am I going to be like, well, maybe they knew, like maybe they are just a bunch of cheating snakes. I don't know that. That doesn't seem like what is a real thing. If you're going to try to be the best you can be in the sport, you have to push everything to the limits. Doesn't matter what rule it is. You are on the limit at all times because everyone else is. So I think that it happened. You know what? They got their penalty for it. And they probably learned from it. Everyone learned from it. I think it gives everyone else for the rest of the year an opportunity to say, like, if Penske's doing really well, hey, check them. You know what I mean? Like that gives us all something to look at. But, you know, Penske is a great organization and they run an incredible team. They win championships. They win 500s. They win everything for a reason. So they're very good at what they do. They're very good at finding the limits of everything. And you know what? Hey, we got found out, and that was a shame. Maybe it was an issue that they weren't really aware of. I don't know that. I'm never going to claim to know that, because I don't want to get into that firestorm of like, well, if you think that, I don't care. I just know that it happened. I get to react to it, and everyone else gets to see it, and we get to be on sports shows, and we get to be trending on the internet, which I think is great for the series.
And probably the better way for IndyCar to look at it is we're not really concerned about the intent. That doesn't matter. You're responsible for your car. So we're not even interested in why this happened. It happened. The penalty is the same either way. All right, I'll get into this next since you brought it up, and you guys are always good on your podcast about kind of looking into ratings and I think also offering a fair assessment. And, you know, when this came out, yes, we're hoping for a little bit more. And if people haven't seen the news, it was something like 307 or 317,000. This is not surprising. You're head-to-head with NASCAR, who started 15 minutes earlier and went later. This is what you're going to get, especially if you're on cable. And I know we'd all love to be on network as much as possible, but yes, IndyCar doesn't own the network. And they have other clients, if you will. And the LPGA has a deal, too, that they're going to get a certain amount of network ability. This is one of these unique events. Long Beach needs to run when it's going to run. They have date equity. They need to run at a certain time during the day. But IndyCar knows this. This is about counter-programming. You need to do everything you can to avoid the NFL and NASCAR Cup races, and sometimes it's very difficult to do. The only other answer I have is live on Peacock, tape delay after the NASCAR race. But that's not great either unless you have a good lead-in. That can work if you're on after a Cup race, and we've seen that before and drew a big audience with tape delay, but Fox has NASCAR at this point in the year.
Yeah, Kevin, that's I mean, I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but it was definitely a surprise for me, because I feel like for a long time we were concerned about IndyCar's social media presence, like, oh, they're not doing enough on social media. I think we've completely fixed that. I think there's great social content coming out. I think the accounts are very active. I think there are people and drivers and teams putting out great stuff. And I believe, like, last year we did see an uptick in ratings overall, right? I think there were several races where I was like, hey, I'm impressed with some of these numbers. We're kind of hitting that million people number more often, which was good. But obviously, and I talk about this on my show, I did kind of a readout of like NASCAR's best NBC race compared to like their best Peacock, or sorry, their best USA race, and like their worst USA race versus like their best USA race. And there's a big gap. Like, you know, NASCAR's best NBC race was something like 4.5 million viewers at Chicago, and their best Peacock race is 2 million less. So, like, that's a huge drop off from network to USA network, right? So I understand that there's going to be a drop off, but that 300,000 number is kind of like the base number of our fans who will always watch the race. That was like when we looked at numbers on NBCSN back in the day, like, versus, if we had 296,000, essentially like no one watching the race. Like 296, like there was 197,000 people at Long Beach. You know what I mean? So that's an amazing thing to see. Our attendance, if we had no one watching the race and no one was at the race, I think we'd have a bigger problem. But we have a ton of people at the races. And I actually, like, I look at some of the other numbers and some of what else is going on. And in my mind, I've actually come to a point where I have no idea what the answer is, other than just people have no idea that we're racing. Like I saw David Reagan's tweet, NASCAR driver, who he's like, I follow, you know, motorsport in America, and I had no idea that an IndyCar race was going on. And I was like, I don't know how that's possible, especially if you're a race car driver, because my entire For You feed on every platform is racing. Doesn't matter if it's F1, IndyCar, NASCAR, like, I see when all these motor races are happening. So I don't know what the answer is to just get it in front of people. And even this morning, when the news came out about the penalties, right? People only read the first tweet. They never read, well, why did it happen? When did they discover it? So I think people's attention spans are so short these days, and we have so much that can capture our attention. If you don't soak people's minds with, like, hey, there's an IndyCar race happening. Like, if you don't put it on television every day in front of them, or if you're not on every social media platform, like, I think you got to be buying ads, right, on every social platform. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. If I did, maybe I'd have a better, like, I'd have a more higher paying job. But it's honestly now become hard to believe that there's not that many people watching, because I feel like there's so many people that are willing to put in their, like, really aggressive opinions on the internet. And I don't know how you can't know that it's happening, because I see it so much. But then if I'm watching a sports show like the Pat McAfee show, which is on right now, if I'm watching, you know, ESPN, maybe there is not enough ads. I don't know. Maybe it is a money thing. And we just need to inject it into more people's lives. I don't know the answer. But
so
for me, it's hard to
tunnel vision. We have tunnel vision, yeah. And we know what's going on in the industry because this is our industry. I'll give you an example.
For sure.
I am a big Pacers fan. I worked for the team for 19 years. We're sitting, yeah, after we come back from the race in the hotel lobby. We watch the end of the NASCAR race, sitting there for a little while, and the Pacers game comes on TV, and my response was, oh, that's right. The Pacers are playing tonight.
Yes.
So we all, yeah, get wrapped up in our little world and,
absolutely,
miss things. So that's it. We can't assume just because we're putting things on social media and we have some friendly journalists who have NASCAR followings like Jeff Gluck and Jenna Fryer, who also post,
yep,
about IndyCar, that everyone's going to see it because people are scrolling and they're not paying attention. So we just have to, you know, as they always say, redouble the efforts. Yeah. And then it comes down to right now, they have the ability to negotiate how this is going to work. And I know in the new TV contract, you want to get as much money as you can,
mm-hmm,
but you,
yes,
need to be thinking about reach. And they are. I'm not telling Mark Miles, yeah, and Penske Entertainment something they don't know. The more on network, the better. But you can't just, yeah, wish yourself on network. That has to be part of the negotiation and the give and take in this. So,
yeah. And I will say there's a lot of people, too, that were kind of responding to the ratings and were like, I don't know how people aren't watching this. Like, it is the funny, like, there's a lot of people, yeah, who are like, it is definitely still not a product problem. The product is not the problem. So, like, we've said that for years, but this was the first race where I truly felt like, dang, like I thought we'd been doing a lot of really good work. And when there's like almost 2 million people that are watching the women's golf on NBC, like, I guess, like, that's cool. Like, I'm glad that's happening. But like, I don't know. Our sport is so exciting. And there's so much that I believe that we have to offer. And I try to watch every sport. I enjoy golf. I watch the Masters. I enjoy playing golf. But visually for me, it's not that exciting unless it's like the Masters. So I'm just trying to put the pieces together on like, okay, there's 2 million people that were watching golf. There's people that are watching, you know, the NBA playoffs, which I understand. NHL playoffs, of course, I understand, like, all that stuff. But like, if we're concerned about going up against the NFL later in the season, I feel like that's almost, I don't know if that argument works as much if we see what we're going up against here at the beginning of the season. You know what I mean? I just think we need more races. It doesn't matter what we're going up against, but I think we need more races. We got to obviously help craft our times and never be against NASCAR. Never, ever, ever, ever be against NASCAR.
Yep.
But if we would have had three races every week, then I think consistency is like, oh, cool. All right, we got this one. I missed that one, but I'm going to watch next week. And then people forget about things in 10 minutes. It's like, nope, I have no idea that IndyCar exists. Month of May, oh, it's here again. You know what I mean? So I could talk again. I could talk about this for hours because it hurts my mind because I put so much of this. I put so much effort. I do a show every week because I'm trying to like let people know what stuff is going on in IndyCar. I love this sport and it hurts that people are not watching it. I don't understand it.
I think the Netflix airing of last year's 100 Days to Indy can help a little bit. I've been contacted,
absolutely,
by people recently that had no idea the show existed last year, and I'm not sure they knew what I was doing now. And oh, I saw you on Netflix. So, you know, little things,
yeah,
like that, and they get it. And hopefully we'll keep, as they say, trending in the right direction. Connor Daly joining us.
Yeah.
Let's talk Indy 500. Let's talk about the very brief test a couple of weeks ago. You got 22 laps. Your teammate Ryan Hunter-Reay only got 7. What, if anything, was learned for your team?
Well, man, I mean, it felt really good to get out there. Just once again, it's the first time in like 4 years that I've driven a different kind of platform of vehicle, different philosophy, different team at the Speedway. So, you know, there's a lot of thoughts that go through your head like, hey, you know, what is this going to be like? And until you actually get in, strap in and turn into turn one flat, you know, and you don't really know what it feels like until you settle into the center of the corner. Then you kind of get a better idea. So We sorted through a couple electrical issues. What you got to think about this year is that there are so many new components. You know, the gearbox is essentially new. Some of the components in the rear end are new. A lot of the blockers for the both the transmission temperatures and the engine temperatures are new. And so teams have been running through that all year, right, for the last six months. And we have not. Like, the last time our cars were on track was May. So we have a lot of new things to run through, and, you know, Chevy was very helpful in getting us, you know, as much information as they could. But you still have to just get out there and do it. And so the cars were put together great. We got out there and we were able to run. You know, there's a few electrical issues that we dealt with, and poor Ryan, Ryan didn't get a single lap, that he was able to do, just because of a couple other things too. But if we didn't do that test, then we would have had to struggle with this all day during the first day of practice in May. So we did get through some things. I feel comfortable enough to where, like, when we get to the first day of practice in May, I'm going out and I know what this car is going to do. So we're just going to get on it. We're going to get into some testing. So it was great to get out there. I can't believe that we didn't get more track time. It hurts. That's like 2 years in a row where you're like so excited to test at Indy and it gets rained out. But yeah, we'll just go for it when day one of practice rolls around. I hope we're the first car out, and I hope we're the last car that takes the checkered flag, because I will do as many laps as possible on that day.
Did you run enough to tell if there's any difference between last year and this year? There are always little subtle changes, and the weight has changed a little bit because we thought there was going to be a hybrid component this year, which we don't have.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of different components. The weight distribution is different. The car is lighter. But for me, there was no noticeable difference as of yet. Okay. I think once you get, you know, a couple days in, once you get deep into some traffic, then you'll start to see trends start to develop. But as of now, you know, running by yourself, not much of a difference. Right. But I'm definitely very curious when you really start pushing the speeds, what the balance does and how the cars will react.
So we like people that support people in motorsport. So I want you to have the opportunity to give kind of the elevator explanation to dumb guys like me of what Polkadot is and what it does.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I've definitely been asked that a lot. But Polkadot, I mean, when you think about it, there's a quick statement that the group really likes to kind of go about saying, and it's basically this: is Polkadot is the powerful, secure core of tomorrow's free and open internet, which is called Web3. So it's not controlled by big tech. Individuals basically control their own personal data, their information, and their finances. So it's kind of like Web3, like Web3, for example, is important because it represents like a shift towards a more decentralized and user controlled internet, which isn't like the current web where like large corporations often control your data. So Web3 enables individuals to own and control their own data and like make transactions without intermediaries, operate in a secure and transparent environment. Like this has potential to foster innovation, enhance like privacy, security, redistribute power, like from big tech companies, like back to us, like to users. So there's a lot there. The community, like anyone who holds DOT, which is a token, you know, like my dad owns DOT, I own DOT, not a financial advisor, but you can vote on these proposals that get put up to this community. Like, hey, what do we want to do with the Polkadot, you know, treasury funds? Like, what do we want to do to either build more on the Polkadot network or do events to make sure Polkadot is known or right, more marketed, essentially? So this was a marketing proposal that we put up for like a month. And, you know, I had to talk to a lot of people on like convincing them why the Indianapolis 500 was, you know, the biggest race in the world, the greatest race in the world, the biggest marketing platform that you could possibly, you know, get on. And sure enough, they, you know, they were all for it. And it's people from all over the world that were voting on this. So it's a pretty cool deal. A lot of high tech stuff, the future. It's definitely tough to understand at first, but it's I'm a techie, and I love knowing about what the future of the internet, I guess, looks like.
So this is good, and this is why there's value in that, because it's the third time I've heard you explain it, and I'm starting to get closer. Each time I hear it, I start to understand.
Call me Decentralized
it
Daily.
A little bit more.
Decentralized Daily is me.
I like it. Let's also talk about people supporting things, and you mentioned Cluster Truck, so they're supporting cancer research. Tell me about the Connor Daly burger that is available right now.
Boy, is it delicious. So Cluster Truck, I've been actually talking to them for a couple of years about doing a small deal at the Speedway, and because I live on Cluster Truck. I live downtown Indianapolis, and I can get Cluster Truck delivered to my house. And I've been using it for years, and I don't even want to think about how much money I've spent on that app. But they've been super nice to me. They were, we were talking about doing this deal for the Burger Bash, and I was like, well, what if we did something a little bit bigger? They're going to be on my helmet for the Indy 500, which is cool. So we've been taught, we wanted to do this last year, like kind of aside from the Burger Bash and what you're doing, which is great, but just didn't end up happening. So when this opportunity came about, it's really cool. So Connor Daly Burger, it's got bacon, barbecue sauce, a little bit of fried jalapenos on, a little bit of spice, a little bit of kick to it, lettuce, tomato, great burger. Honestly, I tried it. I love it. I'm not a big burger guy either. I don't eat a lot of burgers. I try to be an elite athlete and do that stuff. But boys, if you're wanting to treat yourself, this is the treat yourself type night, lunch. So obviously 20% of the proceeds as well, of course, going to the IU Cancer Center, right? So that's an amazing deal as well. We're being charitable. It's a great opportunity for the rest of the month of April and May.
And then Jackson Lee has a burger as well. Jackson is an IU Simon Cancer Center sponsored IMSA driver, and his is more there's white queso on his burger along with crunchy
fried
onion
straws. Which I like. I saw that. I like that idea. I've tried it.
It's really good. I haven't tried yours yet. I'm looking forward to that. And by the way, these are all customizable. There's one thing on there that you don't want for any of their menu items. So for those, I asked Cluster Truck, for anyone that's not familiar with it, just kind of a couple of lines that explains what it is. So what the explanation is, food truck attitude meets world-changing technology, faster delivery, better food and experience, chef-made on-demand meals with the highest quality ingredients with over 100 customizable options, satisfying every appetite, hot and fresh, to your curb. You know, one thing I've said too is if you're with a group of people and nobody wants the same thing, they've got it all in their kitchen. And it's not everywhere. I can't get them out here in Avon yet. If someone wants to be a franchise owner, I'd love that to happen. But basically, greater downtown, Broad Ripple, Hamilton County, Castleton, go to the website, and then they'll tell you where you can order from. So I feel like this is awesome, and we appreciate their support. And they will be on site at the Burger Bash on Monday, late afternoon, May 20th. Our VIPs will have like a spread set up, but everyone else is just going to be able to order from an app. We may even have something set up where they order for you and deliver it to you really quickly right there, whether it's burgers or anything else on their menu. And through the 500, 20% of the Connor Daly Jackson Lee Burger. And tomorrow we are announcing the Kevin Bowen Burger, co-host of the morning show on The Fan. So that will be really good as well. So thanks to them for all of that. What else? Sports car racing. You're going to drive a GT3. is that also in the Indy race in October?
Yeah. So I'll be doing the Indy 8 hour, which is, in October. So that'll be really cool. And honestly, we have a really strong team for that one. Like, we're going to be going for the overall win for sure. Me, Connor DeFilippi, who's a factory BMW driver in their, IMSA GTP program. And then Kenton Koch as well, who's like very, very successful. And he already drives for the team Random Vandals Racing, It used to be the Pirelli World Challenge. Now it's the SRO GT. I don't know what it is, honestly, and that's that bad of me, but I'm doing some sports car racing at some point later in the year.
I've learned a lot about sports car racing in the last few years.
Yes.
These are the same types of cars that you see in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship.
Exactly.
This is like what Vassar Sullivan has. These are super duper cars.
Proper GT cars. Yeah. So we'll be in a BMW. BMW helps support, the Random Vandals racing team quite a lot. And yeah, it's going to be fun. My schedule definitely gets a little bit more diverse after the month of May, a little bit more busy, which is nice. We're going to be adding a couple NASCAR truck races to the schedule as well. Awesome. As part of this polka dot deal. So I got to figure out when and which ones we want to do. And that's kind of slowly getting sorted out. But yeah, we definitely get to do a bit more racing after May. And obviously, we want to win the Indy 500. So after that, then, you know, many things could change, too. So we'll see what happens. But excited about the sports car deal for sure.
Thanks for your time. Thank you for your support of the Burger Bash and the IU Simon Cancer Center. And I'm glad this idea that I had has led to something on your helmet in May. So this is really good. It's working out for everybody.
There you go, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you soon. Connor Daly with Dreyer and Reinbold, Cusick Motorsports, the number 24 Polka Dodge Chevy. Stay tuned. Plenty more to come. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Pato Award, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, let's cover as much as we can in this segment with some things we've missed and kind of circle back a little bit to Long Beach as well. And I'll start with this because I feel bad that we are not celebrating Dixon Moore, but here's the other side of that. He's been celebrated 56 times, and I don't think the 57th is going to be the last time before I get to the tweet. Kurt, he's got a chance.
He does have a chance.
And JJ, he's got a chance.
He needs, I did a little math, and they said there wouldn't be some, but I went ahead and did some. And it now, I mean, very conceivably, based on the number of wins, he wins a race, I think, and I don't have it right in front of me, but it's like every 5.5 races he wins. I mean, that's since he started this streak of now 20 consecutive years of winning a race in a season since 05. But since that win at Watkins Glen.
He only won one that year. He won at the end of the year at Watkins Glen and down year. Yeah.
And since then, he's won a race like every 5 races, he wins one or 6 or something to that effect. It's very, very minimal. And you could see him putting together 3 each of the next 3 years. And in 2027, and what would he be, 45? I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, he would not even be close to AJ's age when AJ retired. Now, AJ didn't win in the last few years of his career, same as, you know, as Mario. But, you know, this would be a very interesting chance that Joseph has, Skip Dixon has. And the other thing I was going to say is Joseph's the only one who's going who could really put together similar numbers. I mean, Power's got 41 wins. Obviously, Power could get really hot very quickly, but we haven't seen that over the last couple of years. But Joseph's got 30 already. And
29.
That's right. He's got 29.
He's back tied with Mears.
He's back.
Yeah.
He's back in the clutches.
We were talking about, you know, he was on the brink of moving into the top 10, tying Dario, PT, and Elio. I think those are the 3 with 31. Now he's back to 29.
I'm glad you said that. I have a story that runs tomorrow. I've not filed it yet. And that wouldn't be one of the stats that I go back and correct. You know, I'm going to correct that he didn't win at St. Pete, all that kind of stuff, but I'm not sure his career win total I would have caught right away. That's a good one. But I mean, Dixon is doing incredible things. And the fact he now has won in 20 straight seasons and 22 seasons overall. I mean, think about this, that Watkins Glen race was almost before Nolan Siegel was born. And he's won a race every year of Nolan Siegel's life. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I looked this up last week because I went out to L.A. early to host an event with Mario Andretti, which is not hard to get me to do. Those are always awesome. And then had dinner with Mario, which was awesome. And I learned a few things. And then he went stronger when he talked to the media the next day. He actually was not as strong in his comments to me off the record about the Formula One thing, but that's for another time. But I looked up his last season at 54 years old. I think he was on the podium once or twice on road courses.
Yeah.
Top 5 3 times. He was still competitive, and he won a race on a short oval the year before that.
Right.
So why couldn't Scott Dixon do that if he wants to for another 6 or 7 years if you have to limp to the finish if you decide? And he may decide, I don't care about this. It's very possible he won't care about this.
He will care about it. He's a competitor. Of course he's going to want to try to win three races, four races a year. And he, if he's still competitive.
No, but I'm saying if he is, you know, 11th in points and might have a chance to win a race here, I don't know if Scott will be in the mindset Correct. To do that.
Correct. And actually, I said a minute ago that, you know, Mario wasn't as, you know, as successful at the end, but he really was. It was Foyt that was more kind of hanging on. But in terms of, you know, Dixon, I mean, it could be incredible. I mean, you could see him winning three races a year, especially with this team as strong as it is. My only fear with him not winning three races a year is that Pelot may beat him a lot, you know, because Pelot's really good too, and he's going to have the same equipment roughly. But Scott's so smart, and this was just a classic Scott race. I'd almost wonder how teams aren't just saying, how the heck did he do this? Because he was fast, you know, when he needed to be, and fuel saving when he had to be. So
back to Lynn, formerly the Spurs fans, question. Did we just see Scott Dixon's greatest drive ever? I thought we saw it last year at the second Indy GP and a Worldwide Technology Raceway. Here's my crazy stat for you guys. Dixon had more top fives than Joseph Newgarden has starts. So I can't say that's his best drive ever, because I think we would probably, you know, that's recency bias. I think it was a great drive. I want to go back and see how he went from last to first in Mid-Ohio and some of the others where he had to do more overtaking. My guess is we could probably look back to about 10 or 15 if we evaluated him and say, wow, that was awesome.
Well, one of the reasons it makes this awesome is he didn't just win the race and do something smart. He drove that last 25 laps with two of the best street course racers in the game chewing on him, you know, and Alex Pelot right there as well with Newgarden and Colton Herta. Those weren't just guys trying to win a race. Those were some of the best. And that was really impressive what he was able to do. You know, I keep going back to, well, you know, Power couldn't do what Scott did, and they were on similar strategies, but they weren't. You know, they weren't. They were on different tire strategies. So
that leads to our next question. Bunchy CB, Chad asks, easy to second guess, but I don't get the Power strategy. He was fast. They gave the fuel number before he pitted. I've never heard him hit that number. Giving up the lead to go slow just seems odd. And yes, I know the winner did the same strategy. So Will Power is the other one that the smart people tell me is real close, if not as good as Dixon. And I can recall circumstances where Power has made the fuel and maintained the pace. And I asked him after the race, you know, was the fuel a concern? And he said, no, it was the tire. So what really hurt Power was that his only set of the sticker alternates that are softer and faster was in the first stint, and there was not much tire wear. Normally, that could have been an advantage that a yellow came out and he got off of them early and didn't have to limp to it, but he was continuing to gap. He wanted to run much longer in that first stint to shorten out those other stints. His goal was he wanted to be up by 10, 12 seconds so he could lose some time, and he just simply, and that's how he lost the lead. Dixon, I believe, was on new alternates and got by him shortly after the restart for like 10th. And then it was just chasing him afterwards. And he made it work. Obviously, they're getting better fuel mileage than we think, because we all thought they were going to be maybe one to two laps short. Doesn't surprise us that Dixon made it, but the fact that he stayed ahead is what was surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. With really talented guys barking up his tree. So that was impressive. And, you know, we talk about sometimes it's tough to follow. It kind of looked like Newgarden had trouble following. You know, it was not as easy as it looked, as you thought it might be.
Yeah, and then it's, you know, getting to them is one thing. The old cliche, passing is another. And that was the strategy that Mike Hull was telling. I mean, Dixon sound resigned. Don't bother telling me the gap. I cannot hold him off. He's going to blow by me. And then Mike said, make him use up some push to pass. You know, get it a little more on equal footing. And then by the time he catches you, the less effective his tires are going to be. It's difficult to pass at Long Beach. So even though you're saving fuel, you might be able to use the fuel in the places on the track you need it. And that's the difference. That's what Dixon does. He's saving fuel in the places he knows that they cannot pass him. So that you just have to ride behind him, and then he uses it when he has to. And he actually had enough to go full really the last two laps. It was almost the last two laps when he started going strong again from when he got the call. Michael at one Eugene Ellison says, I would like to see in a few races all three compounds being mandatory during a qualifying weekend. He means by all three, rain tires?
I don't know.
That would not go well on a dry track.
No, it would
not go well. So IndyCar doesn't have three compounds. I mean, there are at least three in the Firestone stable, but they only bring two per weekend. They may have a different type of tire that they're using at Barber than what they used at Long Beach. So that would have to be a change to add a third tire in there for that.
Well, sometimes it comes up that these are a used set. You know, maybe I often wonder if some people get confused if they've not paid attention to why those are used sets. You know, they were used in qualifying, you know, or yeah, what have you. I mean, so, you know, that's why when people hear that, sometimes I wonder if they're catching why they're used. And it's not like they've got 30 laps on them. Maybe it's just a couple.
And Joe Greenan asked, was there an abandoned start on Sunday? Notice the race started on lap two and the lights in the pace car were off and came back on at 1 point. From my understanding is the race control lost power. Or maybe the track lost power, but there was a power loss, so they did not throw the green flag at the start. And the rules state if you were supposed to start, that lap counts because the teams have done the math on the fuel and so forth. So that's just always been the philosophy that if for whatever reason you don't go green when you're after your either three or four pace laps, that lap counts. So we went green on lap two. So Felix Rosenquist did lead a lap. It just was a lap under caution.
Yep.
So there you go. All right. We'll see what we missed and more next on Trackside.
Hi, this is Rinus VK, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment. What did we miss within the last hour, 45 minutes or so? Scott McLaughlin has put out a statement. That's one of the things I wanted to hear from is how are they going to address this, the drivers, and what's the team going to say? There are just a lot of questions. McLaughlin via social media said, first and foremost, I am proud to be a member of Team Penske. I fully stand with every one of my teammates. Simply put, a mistake was made. I have the highest level of integrity, and it is most important to protect both my own reputation and that of the team. I was not aware of the situation with the software. In this instance, I used a single, very brief, 1.9-second deployment of push to pass in a section of the track exit of Turn 9 where it is typically utilized throughout the race. I hit the button out of habit, but I did not pass any cars, nor did I gain any time advantage. The data which IndyCar has confirms all of this information. While I accept the penalty, I want to be clear that I did not gain an advantage over my competitors. IndyCar's competition is the best in the world, and I would take no pleasure in achieving success in any way other than honestly. We will press forward from here and focus on the task at hand this weekend in Barber. End statement, end quote. So that's one of the scenarios that Kurt and I had talked about earlier. And while I'm not a racing driver or an engineer, my first thought is that is plausible. And from drivers that I've talked to and just some common sense, I think especially on the backstretch, once you get past the start, force of habit, or simply there's no rule against pushing a button that does nothing. Drivers have done that in the past. So, you know, if you're a Scott McLaughlin fan, that's the best case scenario. And I have to believe that IndyCar could back him up on that. I think it's possible other teams can have access to some of this data as well. So that's step one. Now we're going to want to hear from Joseph Newgarden as well and Team Penske, and we'll see if IndyCar is open to offering up any other thoughts on this too. Another thought I had, so I've kind of talked about I want to know about the lights, meaning a lot of the dashboards, we can see the lights lit up. We always say lit up like a Christmas tree when they're on the button, when they're on push to pass. I'm hearing that is not the case for Team Penske. We don't know when that changed, whether that's a year or two ago and someone said, oh, that's because they're hiding something. And I would say no, that this is a competitive tool. Because I think other teams Well, use our broadcast. And when we're on an onboard of a car, they can see immediately that someone is using push to pass. So I don't blame them. I'd take that off too. So not everyone can see exactly what we're doing. So I don't think there's any smoking gun with how that is concerned. A few people have asked how is 100 Days to Indy going to deal with this now. By the way, here's your promo. That debuts on Friday night on the CW, and it's already done. There's nothing they can do with that at this point for this episode, so it's going to have to be dealt with at another point because a championship favorite now has some catching up to do, and another one is all but out this early in the season. But yeah, 100 Days to Indy on the CW this week as to how things could have gone and how they were at the moment for St. Pete as that gets rolling. Couple of other Twitter points that I've seen come in. I think there's more than I can get to. John, let me refresh real quick. Carrie says, Carrie's responding to something else that I don't see. Bill asks, okay, drivers have only so many push-to-pass seconds. When the Penske drivers pushed it, wouldn't the strategist be alerted that seconds are being used when they shouldn't and say, whoa? Yeah, that's my question. I don't know if I've said that on the air tonight, but I know I've asked other people that. Who knew? What did they know? But that's one that really needs to be answered. That you could look up after that first lap and say, we had 58 seconds and now we have 51. The only little bit vague variable there is they can start to use it right before the end of that lap. So maybe. But hey, this is not done yet. More to talk about. We're out of time. Join us from Barber this weekend, NBC on Sunday afternoon, and here on the radio. I don't know when we're on next week, probably on Wednesday, because I think the Pacers play on Tuesday. Thanks for joining us.